Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HTI-1 Proposed Rule Task Force. I'm Wendy Naboa with ONC, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. All task force meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is welcome, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting. You can also make verbal comments during our public comment period that is scheduled towards the end of the meeting this morning. I'll now begin to do a roll call of our task force members. When you hear your name, please indicate that you are present. So let's start with our co-chairs. Stephen Layton.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Hans Butendijk.
Morning.
Hannah Galvin.
Good morning.
Adi Gundapalli.
Yeah, good morning.
Devin McGraw.
Good morning, everyone.
Eliel Oliveira. Bill Sutherland and Cheryl
Turney. Good morning.
Cheryl Turney. Okay, thank you. And please join me in welcoming Stephen Layton and Steve Eichner for our opening remarks.
Well, thank you very much, Wendy, for getting us started. And thank you, everyone, for attending this. I think it's the third meeting of HTI-1 Group 1. We have a full agenda today. We will review our charges once again, refocus ourselves on the manner exception and the new TEFCA manner proposal, dig into some additional TEFCA reasonable necessary activities, and then we will talk toward the end about our planning for the HITAC meeting, where we are going to meet next week and provide a brief update on the work of our task force. We will have public comment at 10 minutes before the hour, and really want to encourage members of the public who are joining us today to feel free to utilize the public comment time. I see we've got a few people. Some of you have been attending every meeting. I'm very impressed by your commitment and perseverance to all of this. And really want to invite the members of the public to participate in the chat during the course of the meeting, the written chat, as well as provide verbal public comment at the end. Ike, you want to add to that?
It's hard to follow that wonderful performance, but I would like to send my gratitude and appreciation for everybody participating today, and to encourage the public to take advantage of the opportunity for public comment as we get to the end. I'm excited by the material that we've got to look at today, and hopefully we can provide some wonderful feedback to our federal partners.
Once again, what we'll do is, as we go along, I'll be sort of leading the verbal discussion. Ike will be watching for questions and trying to capture any core comments or ideas in our spreadsheet as we go along. And then we'll be using that material to put together our formal recommendations to the HITAC. Thinking ahead to the 11:40 time when we're preparing for next week's HITAC meeting, I really want to encourage task force members to be thinking about any key items, topics, or perspectives that we want to include in our presentation to the HITAC from the work of this particular work group, or really any of the work groups if they come to mind. Typically in these intermediate updates, we just kind of review the fact that we've been meeting and what we've been discussing and who's been participating, what subject matter experts. But if there are any key points that you all think the HITAC should be thinking about prior to our final recommendations, please think about those during the course of our meeting and raise those at the 11:40 slot. With that, why don't we go ahead? We will review the task force charge that has been before us here. Here I'll just say that we're not going to read through this every time, but this is a review of what we have been asked to do as a task force. The next slide. Going on through our charge. And then here are the topics that have been specifically assigned to this work group, the Tuesday Group 1. We've already talked about the information blocking defined terms and the exclusions regarding offering health IT. We're now diving into bullets 3 and 4, and we will continue on down this list as we go along. Next slide. So with that, I think Cassie and Dan are going to take us through this next topic.
Great. Thanks so much, Stephen. And thanks to you all. Great to be with you today. I know we have a lot to jump into, so let's get started. I'll be going through the first portion of the presentation today with some background, context, and overview on the policies and proposals that we're discussing today. And then I'll be turning it over to my colleague Cassie Weaver for the second part of the presentation, where we can dive into some more specifics. Next slide, please. So a brief disclaimer before we jump in. The materials contained in this document are based on the proposals in the Health Data Technology and Interoperability Certification Program Updates Algorithm Transparency and Information Sharing Proposed Rule, also known as HTI-1. While every effort has been made to ensure the accuracy of this restatement of these proposals, this document that you see today is not a legal document, and the official proposals are contained in the proposed rule. Please note that other federal, state, or local laws may also apply. In addition, we note that ONC must protect the rulemaking process and comply with the Administrative Procedure Act. During the rulemaking process, ONC can only present the information that is in the proposed rule as it is contained in the proposed rule. ONC cannot interpret that information nor clarify or provide further guidance. And this communication is produced and disseminated at U.S. taxpayer expense. Next slide, please. So here's our agenda today. As I mentioned, I'll give some comments on the policy overview, context, and background of the proposals, and then turn it over to Cassie. And at the last two bullets, you can see, as Stephen mentioned, what we are set to discuss today. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. Okay, so what we have here on the slide is a summary of the proposal and the RFI that we are discussing today. So first, ONC proposes to add a TEFCA manner condition to the proposed revised and renamed manner exception to be codified in 45 CFR 171.301C. We are also calling this the TEFCA manner proposal for short. In parallel to the manner exception proposal, we propose to define in paragraph D of 45 CFR 171.301 the terms used in a TEFCA manner condition. And thirdly, the RFI, the HTI-1 proposed rule also includes a request for information on possible additional TEFCA reasonable and necessary activities. Next slide, please. Okay, so before I jump into some background on the TEFCA manner proposal, I'll just say a very brief word on TEFCA. It's not on the slide here, but TEFCA stands for the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement. The overall goal for TEFCA is to establish a universal floor for interoperability across the country. The Common Agreement will establish the infrastructure model and governing approach for users in different networks to securely share information with each other, all under commonly agreed to expectations and rules. The Trusted Exchange Framework describes a common set of non-binding foundational principles for trust policies and practices that can help facilitate exchange among health information networks. And more information can be found on our website about that. So to jump into the background on this TEFCA manner proposal here, we note that in the Cures Act proposed rule, we requested comments on whether we should propose in a future rulemaking a narrow exception to the information blocking definition for practices that are necessary to comply with the requirements of the Common Agreement. We stated that Such an exception may support adoption of the common agreement, and it may encourage other entities to participate in trusted exchange through health information networks that enter into the common agreement. We also discussed that it would do so by providing protection if there are practices that are expressly required by the common agreement or that are necessary to implement common agreement requirements that might implicate the information blocking definition and would not qualify for another exception. We also noted that such an exception would be consistent with the complementary roles of the information blocking provision and other provisions of the Cures Act that support interoperability and enhance the trusted exchange of EHI, including the interoperable network exchange provisions, the definition of interoperability, and the conditions of certification, citations to which we have here on the slide. We further noted that such a proposal would be narrowly framed such that contract terms, policies, or other practices that are not strictly necessary to comply with the common agreement would not qualify for the exception. Similarly, we expected that any future proposal would provide that an actor could benefit from this exception only if the practice or practices the actor pursued were no broader than necessary under the circumstances. We also commented that these limitations would ensure that the exception would be narrowly tailored to practices that are most likely to promote trusted exchange without unnecessarily impeding access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. Next slide, please. So to continue on with some background on the proposal, a majority of commenters asserted that there should be some form of quote unquote safe harbor for TEFCA participants, while other commenters contended that such an approach was unwarranted and that all actors should be subject to the same information blocking practices and requirements. Overall, the comments received in response to the Cures Rule RFI that were in favor of an exception outnumbered those that were not in favor. Some commenters advocating for an exception covering or incentivizing TEFCA participation noted that such an exception would provide certainty and reduce the compliance burden for the market. The HITACS recommendation regarding the Cures Rule RFI urged ONC to, quote, consider carefully the enduring demand of the Cures Act to provide information promote information sharing and prohibit information blocking amongst all actors, end quote, and expressed a view that a careful balance needed to be struck between encouraging compliance with the information blocking regulations, potentially through the adoption of TEFCA, and the need to investigate information blocking practices and not inadvertently allow bad actors to circumvent compliance with the information blocking practice, the information blocking regulations. So during the development of TEFCA, and since the publication of the Common Agreement on January 19th, 2022, ONC has continued to receive requests for clarification regarding the potential information blocking implications or interpretations of practices, practices defined under the information blocking regulations as acts or omissions, that the common agreement requires of QHINs, qualified health information networks, and of participants or sub-participants through the common agreement's required flow down provisions, in either participant QHIN or participant sub-participant agreements. Those agreements are also referred to as framework agreements. Interested parties have continued to request that ONC provide certainty that such practices would be considered reasonable and necessary activities that do not constitute information blocking. Next slide, please. So with that background, I'll give some additional context about the TEFCA Manner proposal that we're set to discuss today. So we noted that each QHIN participant or sub-participant has chosen to become part of the TEFCA ecosystem, and that where there are mechanisms consistent with TEFCA's technical framework and other requirements relevant to particular types of EHI and purposes of exchange, can support EHI access exchange or use for any purpose permitted under the common agreement and the applicable framework agreements, we believe it's reasonable and necessary for actors who have chosen to become part of the TEFCA ecosystem to prioritize use of those mechanisms rather than other mechanisms that are potentially less interoperable, less secure, or less scalable for sharing EHI with requesters who have also chosen to become part of the TEFCA ecosystem. This proposal aligns with a foundational policy construct that underpins the manner exception. It facilitates an actor reaching agreeable terms with a requester and acknowledges that certain agreements have been reached for the access, exchange, and use of EHI. The proposal also incorporates multiple aspects responsive to public comments and feedback received on the ONC Cures Act proposed rule, which we discussed a little bit previously in the background slides. Next slide, please. So to illustrate the proposed TEFCA manner condition, if a responding actor fulfills a request to access, exchange, or use EHI from a QHIN participant or sub-participant through TEFCA means, then that would be sufficient for meeting this proposed new condition. And in this scenario, the responding actor would not be required to conform any fees to or any license agreements to the fees or licensing exceptions, respectively. The TEFCA manner condition could be satisfied regardless of whether the requesting QHIN participant or sub-participant initially requested access, exchange, or use through TEFCA means or through another manner. Another important feature of the proposed TEFCA condition is it can be satisfied by the responding QHIN participant or sub-participant either fulfilling or offering to fulfill the requesting QHIN's participants or sub-participants request for EHI using TEFCA means. So to illustrate that feature of the proposal, if a QHIN participant or sub-participant actor offers to fulfill a request to access, exchange, or use EHI from a QHIN participant or sub-participant through TEFCA means that are available to both the requester and the responding actor, then that would be sufficient for meeting this proposed new TEFCA manner condition. Even if the requesting QHIN participant or sub-participant initially requested access, exchange, or use in some other manner, or refused to accept the responding actor's offer to fulfill the requested EHI access, exchange, or use through TEFCA access. Next slide, please. Okay, so some additional context and notes here on the proposal as well. So the TEFCA manner condition would be an additional option under the revised and renamed manner exception. The manner requested and alternative manner conditions would also remain available to QHIN's participants or sub-participants responding to any requesters. I'd also note the establishment of the TEFCA condition would not preclude a QHIN participant or sub-participant information blocking actor from making a different choice with respect to supporting non-TEFCA means in complement to TEFCA means of information sharing with others who choose to who also choose to become QHIMS participants and sub-participants. I believe that is the conclusion of our slides on this portion of the presentation. On the next portion, I will pass the mic to my colleague, Cassie Weaver, to talk about the proposed revisions more specifically. But I see Devin's hand is up, so maybe I'll pause there before passing to Cassie for questions, if we have other questions.
I have so many questions, but I'll just start with one because it's pertinent to something that you just covered. So I want to understand a little bit, and if you could go back a slide, how a couple of things fit together. So this last bullet that allows people who are signatories in some way, shape, or form to participating in TEFCA to choose a non-TEFCA pathway to exchange information. And yet on the prior slide, it's actually sufficient, it looked like, for at least one of those parties to say, I'm offering you TEFCA. And therefore, if you're, you know, that seems to sort of be like, as long as one party wants TEFCA, TEFCA is the manner that has been offered. And that is the pathway that I assume the entities are supposed to go down. So it seems like this last bullet on this slide would apply only if both parties to the EHI exchange transaction wanted to go outside of the TEFCA bubble. Is that a safe assumption? Am I reading those two things right?
So I think the word that I focus on there, and Cassie and Rachel, feel free to jump in if you have thoughts there as well. But the word I focus on there, I think, is supporting non-TEFCA means in complement with TEFCA means of information sharing. So I think I would say there is, we're saying the establishment of this TEFCA condition of the TEFCA manner proposal, as we mentioned in one of the previous bullets, if there are two entities who are both participating in TEFCA, you know, that would be one of the conditions that would have to be in place for an entity to use this, but that being in place doesn't preclude one of those entities from also supporting non-TEFCA means in complement to the TEFCA means of information sharing, if that answers the question.
Sort of. So it sounds like I'm a QHIN, I can have a TEFCA line of business and a non-TEFCA line of business for exchanging information. But where my requester is in the TEFCA ecosystem, I can say, you got to use TEFCA, even though I also support non-TEFCA. Is that a proper way to crystallize that?
I think that sounds reasonable to me, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I would just add too that if both are participants, it could also satisfy the manner exception generally to provide it in a different means if both agree to it. So we're saying that just because we have this TEFCA condition, if two participants have decided to exchange otherwise, that's not going to be, you know, de facto information blocking just because they could have satisfied but did not satisfy this TEFCA condition, obviously subject to whatever constraints might be in the relevant SOPs and things like that.
Right. But both of them would have to agree, correct? As opposed to one party going,
right,
you're going to go down my TEFCA swim lane. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We have a couple more questions. And I just, before you ask them, Stephen, I just wanted to let you know, I am going to walk through this in a bit more detail, the actual proposed language. So if your questions might be answered by that, you might want to hold them and see if I address them. But if you don't think so, then we can go ahead and take them now.
This is Steve Eichner. I'm not sure mine would be answered subsequently. looking at TEFCA participants and sub-participants, how are you addressing exchanges within a single QHIN where it's not necessarily going across or between QHINs? Are you considering those TEFCA exchanges or not?
For exchanges within a QHIN, meaning exchanges within members of a QHIN or within the QHIN itself, internally to the QHIN?
So I'm going to hop in here and just suggest that let's put a pin in that question and let's come back to it if you still have it after Cassie steps through what the proposal says.
Lovely.
Thank you. Okay, and then Stephen, I think you put your hand down. So can we go to the next slide?
I'll be the way.
Okay. So here are the proposed revisions. Next slide, please. So in sort of plain language, how this would work. So if you recall the current content and manner exception, it says that if an actor provides the EHI in any manner requested, then the actor and requester can agree to any terms they'd like for that exchange, obviously subject to any restrictions like patient requests and the right of access rule. Also, if the actor is providing the EHI in any manner requested, the actor doesn't need to satisfy any of the requirements of the fees and licensing exceptions, which put certain restrictions on the negotiation and terms of that agreement. Again, this is the current regulatory language that I'm speaking to. But if the actor is unable to provide the EHI in any manner requested, or if that actor and requester are unable to come to agreement on the terms of the exchange, then currently the actor would move to the alternative manner condition, which is a series of alternative means of providing the EHI, which are open source and based on interoperable standards. And then as a sort of last resort, an actor could provide the EHI in a machine readable format, all the other exceptions still being available. So where does this proposed TEFCA manner fit in? It actually can kind of slot in at any point, but the idea is that it identifies as a reasonable and it identifies as reasonable and necessary an information blocking actor's practice of prioritizing using the appropriate TEFCA means, even if the actor could feasibly provide the EHI in other manners, including manners that the requester may have asked for, if certain conditions are met. So this would cover any and all EHI for which access, exchange, or use can be supported by TEFCA means for both the actor and the requester, and only so long as the requester is a QHIN participant or sub-participant, and the purpose of the access, exchange, or use is permitted under the TEFCA governing agreements. It's available regardless of whether the request is initially made through TEFCA means or otherwise, and regardless of whether all of the particular data classes or exchange purposes requested are yet required by TEFCA's governing agreements to be returned in response to a TEFCA request. So if you can satisfy the entire request through TEFCA means, even if all of those data classes aren't yet covered by, for example, a TEFCA SOP or any of the other governing agreements, then you can still satisfy this exception. It's not unavailable because you are sharing all of the EHI, even if that EHI is beyond what TEFCA would require. And then we also have an RFI with this that is considering whether we should require an actor to check the directory of all the QHINs participants and sub-participants under the TEFCA governing agreements in order to see if that requester is listed. This wouldn't necessarily be dispositive as to whether or not the actor has satisfied this exception, but it would obviously inform an assessment of the actor's intent in using it and would improve overall efficiency of these exchanges. So we're asking for feedback on that. Next slide, please. So here is the proposed new text for the new manner agreement, which you will recall that we're proposing to rename since the content half of this exception has timed out and all EHI is now covered by the definition of information blocking. So this is very small type, but you can see here that the first manner, A, manner requested, is the one I discussed, which is when the actor provides in any manner requested, the actor and requester come to any terms they want, subject to other applicable laws and regulations. And then B is that alternative manner, where an actor who can't reach agreement or can't provide the EHI in the manner requested would try to provide that access, exchange, and use under an alternative manner that the requester has agreed to, like using health IT certified to the ONC health IT certification program, content and transport standards specified by the requester and published by the federal government or another standards developing organization. Finally, and again, only if the actor agrees, an actor could provide the EHI in a machine readable format, including the means to interpret that EHI. When the actor provides this in the alternative manner, then the actor is subject to all the limitations found in the fees and licensing exceptions at 171.302 and 171.303. So this is relatively close to current day. Again, it's the renamed one and the content part has been removed, but otherwise not much new on this part. So next slide, please. Okay, so here we have, this is where ONC is proposing to slot in this new TEFCA manner as C. And this is the exact proposed regulatory text. So if an actor who's a QHIN participant or sub-participant offers to fulfill a request for EHI access, exchange, or use for any purpose permitted under the common agreement and framework agreements from any other QHIN participant or sub-participant using connectivity services, QHIN services, or the specified technical services in the applicable framework agreement that's available to both parties, then the actor is not required to offer the EHI in an alternative manner. And any fees charged and any license of interoperability don't need to satisfy the exceptions in 171.302 and 303. So you can see how this condition sort of parallels the manner requested condition. And so far as the licensing and fees exceptions go, they don't apply. But another difference you can see here, which Devin pointed out, is that the requester doesn't have to agree in the way that the other conditions require. But in this case, the class of requesters is limited because we, I think Dan touched on this, but wanted to make sure that we are using this exception for requesters who are able to receive the EHI in the manner that it's being provided. We don't want to just say, sure, offer it in a TEFCA manner. And, you know, so we do want to make sure that the EHI is still being exchanged. And the manner itself is also restricted in that the actor has to provide it using what we sort of have internally shorthanded as TEFCA means, which are those connectivity services, QHIN services, or the specified technical services. Next slide, please. So obviously we have introduced a bunch of new terms in that C TEFCA means condition. So we went ahead and proposed to add this new section D. And you can see here, we will define Q, or we're proposing to define QHIN participant, sub-participant connectivity services and framework agreement, and also QHIN services. These proposed definitions are all informed by the relevant TEFCA agreements, and we worked internally with our TEFCA experts to make sure these made sense. So I'm not going to read through them, but I actually just caught a typo as well. I hope that's not in the actual right text. Anyway, so those are the proposed definitions that cover all of the new terms in C, the TEFCA manner condition. Next slide, please. And here is the RFI for this portion of today's conversation, which is possible additional TEFCA reasonable and necessary activities. And there's sort of three different parts to it. We're looking for comment on whether there are other practices that aren't otherwise required by law, but are required of a QHIN, a participant or sub-participant that pose some sort of concern or uncertainty regarding whether such practices could constitute information blocking. And then we're also requesting comment on if any particular practices required of QHINs, participants, or sub-participants may pose such concerns or uncertainty, and what's the specific source of the requirement, obligation, or commitment? Is it in the common agreement, the flow down requirements, the Q1 technical framework, the SOPs? Let us know where the source is that you might see some sort of conflict. And then finally, we are also requesting commenters identify the practices that they believe are not covered by existing IB exceptions. And if commenters were to advocate, we assess for potential identification as reasonable and necessary activities that don't constitute information blocking. Knowing that not all individuals who have a right or be allowed under applicable law to access, exchange, or use EHI may be in a position to become a QHIN participant or sub-participant. We want to know whether and how any identification of additional reasonable and necessary activities might pose concerns about unintended consequences for those individuals or entities who are not QHINs participants or sub-participants. Next slide, please. And at this point, I will hand it back over to our co-chairs to lead the discussion.
Thank you so much. Great presentation. A couple of questions are stacking up in the chat, mostly from me, maybe I'll go ahead and put one out, and then Hans has one as well. Mine was an observation, but I'll phrase it as a question just to be sure that I've got it right. And that is to say that you're using the terminology here requires the ability to default to TEFCA exchange for any purpose of exchange that is permitted under TEFCA, as opposed to limiting it to those purposes for which a response is required. So this would seem to create an avenue to really push people to start to use TEFCA for some of the new purposes that are not yet required, some of which are not even yet defined in SOPs. And I'm just curious, what are the limitations of that extension? Are we assuming that all of the permitted purposes will be defined by the time this rule goes into place? Or might there be a period of time where there could be confusion around that?
That is a good question that might be something to raise in a comment. But I, as far as using permitted instead of required, I would just maybe observe that a reasonable and necessary activity could also be seen as sort of an incentive to participate in TEFCA. So that, an exception can serve dual purposes here.
Okay. Yeah. So as you say, maybe a comment would be in order. Ike, you got your hand up, but just before Hans.
Yeah. And just to kind of glom onto that kind of component and looking at what is currently permitted under TEFCA, some things may not be able to be implemented under TEFCA for a variety of reasons, not necessarily with every actor. For example, looking at prior registration for providers with public health systems that are necessary to access the data is another level of the cake that TEFCA has not really fully contemplated at the moment. There aren't SOPs or processes in place laid out today, and it may be quite some time before they are. Even though public health purposes are currently listed as a valid exchange purpose, there's no current underlying support there's no underlying documentation or actual processes laid out to actually do it at this time. So how is that kind of gap addressed?
I would say that the text of this proposal does say that using the services specified in the framework agreement available to both parties. So it has to be doable. But I also would like to just recognize, obviously, that you're all hitting on a common point that is something that we are trying to both capture and struggle with here, which is that all of this is happening at the same time. We're working on all of this TEFCA SOPs at the same time that we are drafting and proposing these rules that won't go and be finalized for a few years now. So in some ways, the rule almost has to get out ahead of the SOPs in hopes that we're capturing it correctly. Because by the time it's finalized, ideally we will be further along in this TEFCA process. So I appreciate all these questions and do encourage everyone to submit them as comments. But there will be things that obviously I can't answer today or can't answer in general because TEFCA is catching up in some ways to this proposed exception.
Hans?
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. I think my comment is going to be in the same category, that it's probably not something that you can answer today, but I want to bring it up and then for HITECH, how we shape the questions or the recommendations. Another aspect of that is that as a participant, sub-participant QHIN, easier for QHIN, but more specifically for participant and sub-participant, they may not participate in all the purposes of use yet. So is there intent in the way it was written that one must support all purposes of use, all the exchange purposes, before one can even consider that? Or is it that as long as it is for the purpose of use at hand, where the QTF is in play, and therefore the format is in play, that's where the that's where you can start to do it, even though you do not support everything? I think it's on that scale of what's the entry point that you can start to claim that, and what is it actually that we're looking at? Is it the SOP? Is it the QTF? What element clarifies that if that's in place for this instance, then at that point in time you claim that you're part of TEFCA and can hone in on that? I think it's part of the way we need to shape, Stephen, the recommendation, because there's a continuum there of when do you start to be eligible and what do you actually need to point at to be eligible.
Rachel, did you want to jump in with a clarification? I might have misstated something and
No, I don't think you misstated anything. Oh, okay. I just going to point out that, I think where that comment started was asking about intent, which we cannot clarify beyond what we said in the preamble at this point in time. But I would just point out that the current text, which I think you already noticed based on where you landed with that comment, the current text does not say that the responding actor would have to be able to support any and everything in order to, fill the exception. The wording of the exception, the wording of this condition of the exception is if an actor who is a QHIN participant or sub-participant offers to fulfill a request for EHI exchange access or use for any purpose permitted under the common agreement and framework agreements from any other QHIN participant or sub-participant using connectivity services, QHIN services, or the specified technical services in the applicable framework agreement available to both parties. We do say a little more in the preamble, but I just I did want to sort of make sure that we were aware that the idea of a restriction to say how you had to support everything in order to be able to satisfy the conditions of this exception, that restriction is not placed in here as a requirement of this condition.
Thank you.
As we're taking questions, it might actually be helpful to drop back to slide 22, just because that has the actual proposed text on it, so we can refer to it as we're answering. Yep, there, perfect. I see Devin has her hand up.
I do. I'm going to ask the application of the licensing and fee exception aspects that have been raised in the chat, because that was another question that was spinning through my mind as well. So if you are, in fact, have both a requester and a data holder who are participating in TEFCA, and there is the offer on the table to exchange through TEFCA, then as I read this, the limitations that are set up in the fee safe harbor, fee exception and the licensing exception would not apply. So does that mean that it's, if there's a fee associated with that transaction, as you know, as long as it satisfies whatever are the TEFCA requirements, if there are any, around fees, they're not bound by any of the potential limitations of the existing fee and licensing exceptions? And then does that mean in the context of individual access that the limitation that currently applies, that there can be no fee for individual access when done through sort of electronic means that doesn't require any manual labor, that would be off the table then? And that essentially anyone who is seeking to do individual access through TEFCA might actually get charged fees and should not expect to be protected by that fee exception that currently would preclude those fees in the context of individual access. Am I reading that right?
You're reading it right in the first sense that those restrictions and the fees and licensing wouldn't apply. But as far as individual access, the request does have to come from one of the specified parties here, QHIN participant or sub-participant. And an individual would not be one of those.
Right. But an individual could be using, for example, an app that decided, I would like to take advantage of being able to tap in to the TEFCA so that my patients can actually get their information from, or my users, I should say, my users can get their information from multiple sources through a single query versus having to maintain API connections at every juncture. Let's say we're not in facilitated fire, we're in a different landscape around how individual access occurs through the QHIN, then that fee exception would not apply in that context. But tell me if I'm wrong about that, because that was one of the concerns that I have had around the fee exceptions not applying when TEFCA is used, is what's the impact on TEFCA for individual access? Either when an individual is seeking their information, you know, just as a patient launching a query in, whether they've hired an app to do that on their behalf, where the app becomes a sub-participant as a mechanism of being able to get queries into the TEFCA.
Rachel, can you speak to this? I don't want to.
I think, you know, we don't want to go beyond what's in the rule. We can't. For procedural purposes, I do think that, you know, as we say in the preamble, this exception or this condition of this exception, remember the manner exception would continue to function, as right. We explained in the preamble, as a pick list. and it's also, like all information blocking exceptions, voluntary. So if an app wants to set themselves up as an individual access service provider under TEFCA, then there would be certain features to how the responding QHINs participants and sub-participants could interact with that TEFCA IAS provider that would maybe not apply if that particular app chose to go down a different path. But it was their choice. We noted that this exception, this condition of the exception, this new way to meet the manner exception, would recognize that folks who are a QHIN participant or sub-participant have decided to become a part of TEFCA and that certain agreements have already been reached among the people who have chosen to become a part of TESCA. And that's really as much as off the top of my head I know that we can say today within the bounds of protecting the rulemaking process.
Yeah, I'm sort of simultaneously looking at Zoe's response in the chat. I'm just going to say, I think for purposes of our subgroup, this is worth some further consideration, because I do think that we need to think more about whether this creates a disincentive for anyone to become an IAS participant under TEFCA, if in fact that might translate into higher fees. So just parking lot that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that the fees question kind of goes both ways. You know, would this new manner proposal potentially lead to higher fees, or would it in any way prevent the charging of fees that might otherwise be charged? That was my original question. I think Devin sort of put my mind to rest there. So it's really... The key here is that people are getting out potentially of the limitations on fees. Is that right, Cassidy and Dan?
All right, let me unmute. Yes, in the same way as the satisfying the manner requested condition, that language is the same.
All right. Anyone else have any questions? Anyone put anything into the chat that they want to raise? Hannah, you have a comment here in the chat.
Yeah, I just put a couple of comments in the chat, right? I mean, I think they've been mostly reflected in the comments that others have made, right? I think, you know, at a high level, my understanding is that, you know, the purpose behind this is to encourage the industry to participate in TEFCA, right? And to become QNs, become participants and sub-participants, and to offer this as a manner to exchange data. And yet at the same time, we are very early in this process, and we, you know, have only specific SOPs. We haven't quite tested out, right? You know, we don't know who are going to become sub-participants and sort of, you know, exactly how that's going to work. And so I think, you know, I have questions sort of about that implementation and sort of what that's going to look like, right? And if we say, you know, this would be for all permitted uses, and then someone, you know, an actor, wants to says, well, I can exchange data in this way because you requester are a participant or a sub-participant in TEFCA, and they want to exchange data in a manner outside of one of the current SOPs that hasn't been sort of adequately defined or tested. Are we achieving our goal if that information is not necessarily, you know, do we know that information is being, you know, achieved, you know, or exchanged successfully? You know, are we just sort of trusting that that's happening, or do we want to have some limitations sort of within the current SOPs and sort of how that's been defined? And you know, I think that's, you know, sort of one of my questions and sort of how this will work kind of in the real world. But I think that's sort of the chicken and the egg kind of discussion, right? And some of that we may have to wait and sort of see how it works and whether there needs to be, you know, further kind of definition after it. But I think that's where both of my comments kind of went to is do we have enough information yet to kind of give this broad-based manner exception around it, or does it need to be a little bit more narrow?
Were you looking for an answer, Hannah?
Or for us to consider. I don't know if Cassie has an answer to that or Rachel has an answer to that. I think my thought there would be, you know, do we really need to consider the what this would look like in the real world and the implementation considerations, you know, in some of those sort of those edge cases. You know, I don't know that we need a, maybe a little rhetorical, but Cassie, if you have a thought on it, you know, certainly.
I don't have anything specific to that. Yeah, as Rachel put in the chat, it's true. At a certain point, we do need to step back and let you all decide what to do as far as recommendations. But it, I just personally speaking for myself, I do appreciate hearing all of this and all the points being raised.
Hans?
Yeah, reacting to a couple of the thoughts and that particularly put on, I think it's a good question to ask and contemplate, with for which I'm not sure what the answer is, and that we have a clear recommendation. But there is this balancing of, on the one hand, encouragement of participants and sub-participants and everybody participating in TEFCA to use the TEFCA capabilities that are out there is good. And in that sense, that is rebuilding and continue to build on the investments that everybody's making. And whether that results in the way this is phrased, that where somebody's asking to do it differently than what TEFCA does, I'm not convinced that that would necessarily make it more expensive or otherwise, but I think it's a fair topic to contemplate on. Is this, does this have the desired effect by encouraging a use of the shared capabilities that are put in place? And if that means that from the use cases and the situations, scenarios that are being raised, to say that, hey, what is available doesn't quite fit, we have this other variant there, that seems to also be an encouragement for TEFCA at that point in time to find a way that there is a agreed to a method that all can participate in consistently that would address that. So generally with how I've seen some of these networks operate, it happens to coalesce and allow you to coalesce around common solutions rather than one-offs for individual scenarios. So that's what I'm trying to look at. Can it help reinforce TEFCA to align on common use cases and appropriate variants where that needs to be?
Ike?
And again, coming back to my earlier question, from a participant perspective or sub-participant perspective, is it the intention that the rules, the same set of exceptions apply to exchanges between participants and or sub-participants within a single QN, or is the trigger in this case for the TEFCA requirements solely looking at exchanges between QNs?
I can't speak to intent beyond what we have said in the preamble and also the definitions here, which does address the definitions of QN participant or sub-participant for purposes of this exception. I'm not sure if Rachel can offer any other insight on that, but insofar as what's the intent, I can't say beyond what's there. I know that's not satisfying.
I guess it may be an opportunity to provide some feedback depending upon how the other task force members feel. I could just, I'm not saying right or wrong in that context. It's just understanding, looking for clarification about, hey, which is a universe to which this applies. So if it's an opportunity, if I'm the only one who doesn't understand it, it may not mean it. Require a comment. If there are other folks that are equally or don't have a clear understanding, that's a different subject.
Yeah, I did capture your question in our task force discussion in the spreadsheet. I mean, I do think, to me, the language is pretty clear. You know, that if two sub-participants or participants are in the same QHIN, this would not seem to differentiate. You know, if they're in the same or in different QHINs, I mean, this would seem to apply then also to exchange within, between QHIN participants in the same QHIN, you know, if in fact they, you know, were requesting data from one another. So I think it, but I think just asking ONC to clarify that point in their final rule would make a lot of sense. And I got a plus one out of Devin, so hey. All right, we should probably go on so that we can stay on task here. And I think I really appreciate Rachel's comments in the chat, which is that we need to, you know, we've all been asking questions for clarification. We need to decide what of this is going to turn into recommendations to the ONC or to high tech to get, then give to the ONC. And here again, I think it's important that we, if we're not clear, that suggests that perhaps there's an opportunity for greater clarification. So that would be our recommendation. Or maybe we just didn't read carefully enough. All right. And this is discussion on this whole topic, correct? So so there was one thing we have not touched on is the question of the RFI as to whether an actor would be required to check the QHIN directories. And I'm curious what people think of that. And maybe we can go back to the slide that includes the language in terms of just what you're asking. Is it, can we pop up a couple of slides?
I think it's just one back, maybe.
Okay, here we go. Perfect. So anyone have any thought as to whether our task force would want to provide comment on these points? I think Cassie, you were presenting at this point. Do you want to sort of walk us through the highlights of this one more time, just so that people are not just trying to read it on their own.
Sure. Yeah. So really, we're looking for folks to catch anything we might have missed, which is a broad statement. But are there any particular practices that aren't required by law, but would be required by virtue of an actor's status as a QHIN participant or sub-participant? That are there practices basically that are required by some kind of agreement in TEFCA that could constitute information blocking? And if so, what practices are those and where is the source that requires them? Is it in the common agreement or a flow down requirement in the framework agreements? And then if there's practices that they believe that aren't covered by the current exceptions and that you would advocate we do assess for potential identification as an exception, as a reasonable and necessary activity, to let us know. And also let us know if any of these activities might pose concerns about unintended consequences. Some of these I think have already been raised here today, especially about the unintended consequences for EHI access by individuals or entities who are not QHINs participants or sub-participants.
Okay, Devin, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, it occurs to, you know, so we do have the benefit of having you here, Stephen, as a QHIN and others on the group who have sort of tried to keep up with where the common agreement and other sorts of policies are playing out with respect to TEFCA participation. It does. So some of us may be sort of more aware of what some of those requirements are and be a little bit more attuned to where there might be you know, some unanswered questions or some obstacles or some further things that would need to be addressed. But to the extent that there's probably other things that that other participants in TEFCA are thinking about, or potential participants in TEFCA, I should say, and or the Sequoia Project, which is the recognized coordinating entity, does it make sense to have them come and talk to us about what they see and their thoughts on this? Or do we just decide that they're going to be the ones to comment specifically on that? It you know, it does occur to me that, you know, depending on the time that we have allotted for us to handle all the issues in our purview, that would be very interesting to get a sense from the Sequoia Project about what they think about this and sort of where some additional avenues of questions or comments might come up. I've raised the ones that have occurred to me initially. I'm going to do some more thinking by going back through the common agreement and different policies and procedures to sort of further refine my thoughts. But it does occur to me that if we wanted to bring in experts around this topic, that we could, or we could count on them to raise those issues through their own comments.
I think it's a good point, Devin. And Zoe, you're still here with us. I think if you want to either put something in the chat, responsive, or consider coming on the mic here when we move to public comment shortly, that would be helpful. Hans?
Yes, thank you. I've been trying to figure out in our discussions what would fit under this, and there still might be some thoughts coming up, but at this point in time, with the clarifications on the manner, the opportunity and ability to focus on capabilities that TEFCA is establishing and thereby have that already wider reach, hard-pressed at this point in time to find any other activities that are being contemplated or already defined under TEF that should be raised here. So not to say that something might not come up, but I'm not convinced that at this time, as part of this round, how much that will be. I think it might be more likely to occur once TEF takes off more, there is actual production environment, we see what's happening, that something may come up that says, actually there is something else that's happening that's reasonable and necessary that does not quite jive with the information blocking and the exceptions that needs to be addressed. But at this point in time, I cannot bring up anything.
Okay. Good. Thanks, Zoe. We have Hannah's hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to say briefly that I agree with Hans, and I think that was a little bit of my point earlier, that I think that we're not going to know as much, you know, some of the issues that are going to come up until we see this in action. And then I'm interested to understand, and I think ONC probably can't comment on this today, what sort of the next steps in policy development may be once we see sort of TEFCA sort of in action. But I agree with Hans that, you know, and others know far more about TEFCA and the common agreement than I do on this call. But I am very interested to see what happens in the next 24 months as we really put you know, this in process. And I think there will, you know, there will be more to really understand around how the data exchange is happening, and maybe more opportunities to sort of clarify or have future policy after that time.
Okay. Any other thoughts? I would not be averse to cutting to public comment early to give Zoe plenty of time to come online and join the discussion. Would that be acceptable to our ONC colleagues?
That works for us.
Yep.
Great. Why don't we do that? And then if we, as it seems we might have some time left over, we can transition to the discussion of preparations for next week. So, all right, ONC, you want to do the, Wendy, you want to do the public comment honors here?
Sure, thank you. So we'd like to open the meeting for public comment. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, please press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute or unmute your line. Okay, and I see Zoe Barber, you have a question?
Can we unmute Zoe?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Yes, now we can. You have 3 minutes, go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to make this brief. I guess, so the first comment is just also reinforcing some of the discussion here, you know, about kind of getting too far ahead of the common agreement and, you know, the various SOPs, understanding that this, you know, rule will be finalized, you know, in a couple of years, potentially. But just wanting to kind of underline, it's not just the SOPs, but that sort of the whole scope of the common agreement is being revised to support facilitated fire and brokered fire. So the current definitions of things like connectivity services, which you know, has a primary place in the codified text in this condition, you know, may not even mean what it currently means today. So I just want to make sure that that's understood. And then a couple of other clarifications. So I understand as I read the preamble text and the codified text, I believe that I understand that both parties have to be subject to a framework agreement for this condition. However, it's unclear, kind of based on the phrasing of the proposed text, if the exchange is actually intended to be happening pursuant to one of those framework agreements, right? Is the exchange actually happening under the legal structure of one of those framework agreements? The codified text itself, so I, my assumption based on the preamble language is that the answer to that is yes. However, the codified text seems to refer only to or talks about the connectivity services, QHIN services, which is a new term, and then specified technical services in the applicable framework agreement available to both parties. But it doesn't say if the exchange is supposed to be happening pursuant to one of those framework agreements, or could it be using the specified technical services within a QHIN pursuant to their, you know, intra-network QHIN agreement that's totally separate from the framework agreement. And a clarification there also in that the term and the framework agreement, which encompasses the common agreement, as you know, the QHIN participant agreement, participant sub-participant agreement, and any other flow down agreements, that term is limited to the QHIN to QHIN based exchange. So different QHINs may set up their framework agreements differently, and they may combine their, you know, TEFCA exchange, which is QHIN to QHIN, with their intra-network exchange. And maybe that's all in one document, or those could be two separate documents. So just kind of wanted to clarify that distinction between the technical structure and then the legal governance structure.
Great. Thank you, Zoe, for your comment. I don't know if anyone would like to respond to that. Okay. If not, Zoe, I'm sure that that was all noted. And thank you again. I'm going to pass it right back to you, Stephen and Steve, if you'd like to close us out.
Yeah, well, we're not ready to close out just yet. but let's
got more comments.
Let's go back to our slides here. And I think we want to be on slide 23. Just the next one. Yeah, there we go. No, I'm sorry. 26. I'm looking at the numbers wrong. My bad. This is what we just covered. And I've tried to capture a bit in the task force discussion. Here again, we really want to invite people to come back to the spreadsheet and start to submit any recommendations that you'd like us to consider bringing forward to the HITACH. On the next slide, we do want to plan for our presentation on the 17th. So just as a reminder, next week, this group will be meeting on the 16th. And the task force or work group two that normally meets on the 17th will not meet next week because we will be giving an update to the HITACH. And what I wanted to ask all of you, and I asked you at the beginning to think about this, is if there are any topics that we have discussed specifically in this work group that you feel warrant giving the HITACH a heads up. You know, anything that that we feel might be particularly controversial or just warrant them thinking ahead. So maybe if we can slide back up to slide 8, just quickly, that is the topics that our group one has been working on. And the first one was information blocking defined terms. This just as a reminder. The second was an RFI around additional exclusions to offer health IT. And I know we had a lot of thinking about that. Then the two we just covered. And then, of course, we can't anticipate our discussions next week in our presentation the following day. So we'll leave it at that. But is there anything that comes to mind for anybody from our discussions thus far that you think we should be calling out in our HITACH presentation next week? Hans?
Yeah, perhaps the one discussion around clarifications around the offerer and the outsourcing, the use of consultants, that there might be, that we have some more clarifications and questions. That's the only one that for work so far jumps to mind. And I don't want to jump to infeasibility, but there will be something coming up there, but we haven't talked about it yet.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard to anticipate that. Okay. Devin?
I don't really know that anything that we've talked about so far is so controversial that we need to give folks a heads up that something big is coming. I think a lot of what we've raised are some really important clarification questions and a few concerns, but we also haven't really fully discussed them yet. We've just started to amass a spreadsheet. So in my view, it feels a little bit premature, but I do think it's worth, it's not horrible to say some of the issues that have come up include blah, 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 but we're not finished with discussing them yet. I mean, obviously there's no harm in doing that. These are public meetings. Anybody could have sat through them to give a little bit more color to the conversation, but we haven't landed the plane, in my view, on anything from
right. Yeah, I agree, Devin. And again, I'm not suggesting that we necessarily, get prime the pump with things. I just wanted to open that up as an option if anybody had anything that they were particularly concerned about. So maybe what we should do at this point, given that we have 10 minutes left, is to return to the spreadsheet itself, which of course is slide 28, but we can pop over there. Well, also, I'll just point out to members of the public is we are continuing to watch for any raised hands. And if somebody has something that they decide they want to bring forward, anyone who sees a hand pop up, we can certainly go over to that. in terms of the spreadsheet, let's look. Funny, people keep putting a B in cell 1A on our tab, and I'm not sure why. Dan and Wendy Pernell are both in this cell, and I went in and I deleted that B, and then it came back again. I don't know if this is just a
artificer.
Are you seeing that? Yes, we are all seeing that. I see. Okay, I'm not sure why. I'm going to try once again to delete that B and see if it goes away. Okay, good. All right, good. So we are on our Group 1 tab. We've had some recommendations come in on the 5.2, the first topic, information blocking defined terms and proposals. And perhaps this would be a chance for us to discuss whether any of these can start to turn into task force recommendations, or whether they at the very least warrant any discussion or inclusion in our report back to HITECH. Hannah, and I'll point out here that I actually went in and monkeyed with some of your recommendations. I hope, Hannah and Ike, you don't take too much exception to that. I was really just trying to add some clarification to the language that you had provided, but I highlighted my edits in red. Hannah, do you want to say anything about your recommendation here and whether you think this is something that we will want to bring forward as a task force recommendation?
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I liked the language that you added there. I don't feel very strongly that this be a task force recommendation. I think that this is something that I presume is happening in the back halls anyway. But I think that it's something I wanted to point out, and but I don't think it's sort of our kind of top need to bring forward as a recommendation. I would leave it on the spreadsheet and let's see what our other recommendations are. I do think that I do think that it is something that I do assume that the groups are working together, and that OIG, in their auditing, understands this, right? So I don't think that this is a formal recommendation that's needed at this time, but unless others disagree. Devin, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Go ahead, Devin.
I was raising something totally different, Hannah.
Okay, please, yeah.
Sorry.
Why don't you go ahead then, Devin?
Sorry about that. I'm going all the way down to the comment from Ike and you, Stephen, around clarification that exclusions around public health access and activities are not necessarily offering health IT. And I want to dive back into that proposed language a little bit more. But data registries offered by other entities, like a rare disease nonprofit, is not a provider. So they're not going to be subject to the information blocking rules, period. You're not an actor, you're out of the mix. I think we need to be a little bit careful that a disease registry offered by an actor doesn't mean they're offering health IT. Again, but they might be covered as a provider per our prior discussion. So I'll just say that I'm not so sure about that comment, because I think we want to be very careful not to step too broadly in terms of defining that exclusion. And again, a rare disease NPO, not an actor, not a provider. And anyway, offering health IT is really something that is relevant to the certified health information technology vendor definition of an actor.
So given that, Ike, do you feel that there is a comment here that we might want to be bringing forward to the HITECH?
I think it falls in the category of kind of, it depends. I really appreciate Devin's point, but again, looking at the actor component, it's still not entirely clear looking at the definition of actors and their role to different activities as to what constitutes enough of a being a medical provider to trigger whether things relate or not. Same kind of thing applies to public health. Public health, some cases, is a healthcare provider. In some cases, in some situations, it's not. So what becomes enough of a crack the door open, if you will, for it to count?
Yeah, I would not say that it's not worth further exploration around a comment that we might make, but it feels very premature to raise this with the PITAC.
Oh yeah, yeah. And again, I'm taking this opportunity, Devin, to just do some of our work here. Yeah. And maybe Hans, I'll look to you here again. This is what you mentioned as potentially.
He had to drop off for his webinar.
I'm sorry. Too bad. I see that. All right. Well, we are nearing the end of our time. Any other thoughts from either work group members or members of the public that you want to raise here in the last few minutes? Ike, you had one other comment in here. Provide clarification that meeting one or more exclusions in one role offering may not create another role. I don't remember the context there.
I think it's looking at basically if you're excluded in one category does not mean you're necessarily excluded from another role. In other words, just clarifying that if you're not included because of a role you're playing in one space, it does not preclude you being included in a different role you may be performing somewhere else.
Devin?
Yeah, this is relevant to just the discussion that we just had, I think, Ike, unless I'm getting it totally wrong, which is you might be, you know, that exclusion may mean you're not offering health IT, but it doesn't mean you're not a provider who would be subject to the rules that apply to providers. Do you see what I'm saying? Just meeting an exclusion in one area doesn't exclude you from the rule entirely.
Exactly.
We can think about how to frame it so that it, if it feels unclear. The exclusion is not your get out of jail free card necessarily.
Or a single exclusion.
Right, right.
Great. All right. And again, just trying to capture some of that. Okay, well, that brings us to time. I really want to thank everyone for your participation. We've got one more slide on slide 30, which just again outlines where we are heading. We will meet again next week, talking about information blocking infeasibility, exception proposals, revise the existing condition around uncontrollable events, and a new condition about third party seeking modification use, which I'm fascinated by. And then, as I said, we have the HITAC update on the 17th. You're all welcome to attend that. And then we'll meet again later in the month. Any final words, Ike?
Nothing except, again, thank you all for participating. Thanks for being here, and thank you for continuing to contribute great information to provide feedback to ONC.
Great. All right. Thank you all, and we'll see you next week.